Welcome back to the Mining Pod. On today's show, we're joined by Jan Chopik of Brains, after a word from our sponsors. Did you know that you can make more money by merge mining other networks? Check out makemoremoneymining.com for information on BIPs 300 and 301, a proposal to bring more revenue to Bitcoin miners through sidechains and merge mining called drive chains. Increase your mining revenues and learn more about participating in Bitcoin governance by visiting makemoremoneymining.com. Are you a miner who wants to activate Bitcoin improvements? Check out activation.watch. See what Bitcoin improvements the Bitcoin community, developers, and miners are considering and show support by signaling for one of many BIPs up for consideration. Activation.watch.
Hey, Mining Pod, I'm Lee Bratcher, president of the Texas Blockchain Council. The Texas Blockchain Summit is now the North American Blockchain Summit. The same emphasis on policy, energy, and Bitcoin mining, but now expanded by working with our partners across the country. We've got great sponsors lined up like Riot, Marathon, GDA, CleanSpark, Bitdeer, Lancium, Cormint, Compass, HTS, Crypto Power, Priority Power, Sonoda, and many more. Solidify your next deal or JV, or just come for the networking on November 15th through 17th in Fort Worth, Texas, for the third annual North American Blockchain Summit. We'll see you there.
Are you a retail or institutional investor interested in Bitcoin mining companies? The Miner Mag brings you free data and analysis from all major NASDAQ-listed Bitcoin mining operations to know who stands out. Check out visualized metrics and data-dependent stories at theminermag.com. Today we have Brains, Jan Chopik. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Thanks for having me here. I'm pretty good.
Cool. Well, I've been seeing a lot of you guys, the Brains team, floating around the world. You guys went from Honey Badger to Hong Kong and a few conferences in between. And before we dive into talking about control boards and mining pool stats and all that stuff, I was just curious, like, how is the conference circuit?
Well, if you're a company based in the center of Europe, in Prague, you have to have your team flying around and meeting the actual mining guys. There's not much mining in the Central Europe really happening, but we happen to be the company from there providing some products related and supporting Bitcoin mining stack. So yeah, I mean, that's sort of like, I don't want to say like a daily business, but it's like a yearly business. There's a couple events that we definitely don't want to miss from the calendar. And Honey Badger is actually one of them that like our team goes there really regularly every year. And essentially, this was the first conference back in 2018 where we announced Brains OS. So there is some tradition that draws us back to that place and venue.
Yeah. Is there any conference that you're like, I have to hit this one every year, the Brains team has to hit this one every year? Because there's Honey Badger, there's the Hong Kong every year with Bitmain. There's like three or four in Austin per year. And then there's, of course, like the larger ones like Consensus, Permissionless, things like that. For people just like interested in the industry, like which ones have you found to be like the highest signal?
Well, for us as a company providing the mining shovels essentially in the software field for now, and also entering the hardware, we definitely want to be at the Disrupt, Mining Disrupt. Sure, the big ones like Bitcoin 2023 this year. Bitcoin Amsterdam is also some place, is a place where you can meet our team. I know there is specific Bitcoin happening in a few weeks, isn't it? So that's where we are going to be for sure. Actually, there's a proof of work conference in Prague, like right now where our guys are, and some people from the US actually came over as well, and we got to meet them. So you'll find us at the major events where the miners are. One event that I actually do regret not attending last year, but it was like really crazy year in terms of the events, was the skiing Bitcoin. Like I've been skiing since I was 3 years old. So I was thinking like I think there were like two events in the row and I just decided going just for one, but they like technically I could have stayed in the States for 2 years, but then it's a bit complicated with family and stuff. So
no, that's a great event. Amanda does an amazing job with it, so if you come out, we should definitely hit some runs together. I've been skiing since I was a little kid also, so yeah. I'm a huge fan of that event. Also ran some podcasts out there last time. We ran it in the ski lodge in the basement, and it was a terrible recording setup, but we like kind of gutted it out. I recorded with Fred from Marathon and Zach from CleanSpark. And then also,
Dan from Foreman. And but Dan, we did in a separate room. But yeah, we did it in the basement of a ski lodge, and people were walking by with their ski boots. And there was like a lot of
what a noise.
Yeah, there was a lot of noise background. But it sounded kind of cool because I prefaced it and was like, oh, we're in a ski lodge, so you're going to hear some noises. And so there's some ambient background noise, if you will, and it worked out pretty well. So if you come, let me know, because that's definitely a good spot.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, well, you kind of hinted at where I want to go first, and that's talking about control boards. And we'll get later into like Brain's pool. I definitely want to talk about the pool itself. But control boards are the new thing that you guys are pushing. There are obviously a lot of competitors on that market as well right now. I feel like a lot of people are launching control boards at the moment. I want to go through like your guys' product line and hear the pitch on it and hear like all the engineering details you guys have put into this that miners are interested in. And then I have some follow-up questions about like sort of the business side of things.
Okay, so the whole story with the control board, that's something that we have been thinking about for past 2 years, but we were like, okay, that's a niche market. And essentially at the times of S9s or back in the day of S17s, which was next major milestone in the mining hardware development, speaking of end miners, by that time, the machines were still kind of open. So there was really no good need or incentive to build a separate control board, as long as you could basically freely install any aftermarket firmware onto the control board. But then the policy of the manufacturer changed for various reasons. The official reasons were like computer security, but warranty reasons. But I kind of don't buy this story. What they did is essentially introduced something that's called Secure Boot. So essentially, it's present in laptops. You can enable it. Essentially, what it means is that a computer refuses to boot anything that is not signed by a specific key. But in case of normal computers, you can actually configure this public key used for verifying the signature of your operating system if you want to get that key, or you can rely on the pre-signed kernels and operating system images from the vendors. And that's sort of the, let's say, I would call it, it's an optional end-user security. But here it's essentially enforced by the manufacturer uploading the key, or to be precise, a hash of the public key into an OTP memory that's one-time programmable in the control board. Once it's burned in, there is actually hardware obstacles preventing booting anything else. That makes it very difficult to actually run aftermarket firmware. There are options to do it through an SD card. Technically, there are some exploits floating around and so on. So this was actually the final kick that made us rethink that idea of the control board as an alternative for any new hardware that's being introduced to the market. That will provide a safe alternative that if you're desperate, like you want to run aftermarket firmware like Brains OS on your machine, and let's say that's a new type of control board that is not supported yet for various reasons, you still have the option take our control board, plug it in and run it, because the miner really is not about the control board. It's about the hash boards, about the chips that are actually doing the proof of work algorithm. The rest is just, let's say, management that needs to be done in order to keep the chips busy all the time and collect the results from them. So this was the thinking. With a control board, for us, it's also a sort of a test bed that we are able to produce that piece of hardware at a reasonable quality and scale so that we... In the future, when eventually there is something that we call internally Brains Miner available in the market, this is just one component of it. So we have an agenda behind just providing the control board. I think like Epic guys actually went the other way around. They already had the full box, but I think the Intel project somehow went south. I don't know all the details really, but they basically took out the control board and started selling it as well. So having the competitor that's also in an interesting situation. But I would say in general, in the industry, it's always good when there are multiple alternatives for your firmware of choice. For sure, I would be most happy if the firmware of your choice is BrainsOS. But it still goes back to the fact that normally you're not able to run any aftermarket firmware easily on any of the recent machines because of the reason that I stated. And it's quite surprising that the customers are actually not pushing the manufacturers to opening this up again. If you take an Android cell phone as an example, if you buy this piece of hardware nowadays, it's always an opt-in where you can actually unlock the bootloader to, upgrade it or overwrite it with a different firmware in exchange, let's say, for a warranty. These machines typically have like 1 year warranty. And after that, you can do it even before that, but this should be the proper approach, basically saying, okay, the machine is locked for, and the true reason is not security. The true reason is that I don't want our users to mess with the hardware because we don't want to be held liable for any issues related to running aftermarket firmware. But if you want to do it, you just have to unlock it this way. If you do it, then it's actually burned in the control board and you will not be able to apply the warranty, whatever. That means there would be a solution to having this flexibility in the hardware. But apparently the push from the customers is not strong enough towards the manufacturers to do something like this. And it's pretty much like all the same. Bitmain is doing the same as MicroBT. Like they still don't act as I would imagine as a normal manufacturer should act.
So taking a step back really quickly, there's BeagleBone, there's Amlogic, like Luxor just launched one, Epic has one. I mean, there's other like stock ones out there. Can you walk us through the control board market and tell me a little bit about each single one as you see them from Brain's perspective? And if not that, at the very least, kind of tell me a little bit about how like the Brain's control board is separate from some of those out there. Real quick context for this. The thing I always hear is people really like the BeagleBone. They always like try to find those, but they're harder to find on the market right now, apparently. If that's incorrect, feel free to dispute that. But I'd be curious to get your thoughts.
Yeah, let me speak to that. So if we start from BeagleBone, I think this was the first, precursor to show or demonstrate how the hardware can be locked for the user. So that's the first control board that has the secure boot enabled. I personally think that the BeagleBone control board is the least powerful piece of hardware out there. And even though it is possible to use it throughout the whole Bitmain product range, even with BrainsOS, with an SD card, or we can talk about the installation later, the power actually limits the features that you have in the operating system in terms of like you get all the features, but the performance, and I'm not speaking about hash rate, I'm speaking about the times when the machine is doing some tuning, and like these times get extended because simply the CPU is not powerful enough to keep the chips busy, so you have to run the chips at basically higher difficulty than you would like to. Then the second one, Amlogic, that's actually a slightly or actually much better piece of hardware. That's I think a four core machine, four core control board, and that allows the luxury of basically devoting one core per hashboard for feeding the jobs and collecting the results. But that's also one of the control boards that also has the secure boot. Then the third type that had been used originally on S9s, and that's a very nice and flexible piece of hardware. It's called Zinc. It's a CPU on the Zinc CPU is essentially a hybrid of a dual core CPU plus a small FPGA. FPGA is field programmable gate array. So essentially, part of the firmware can be synthesized into the FPGA as sort of gates that can do certain things. And in case of the Bitmain machines, the FPGA is being used to stream the jobs and collect the results from the chips, so that the main CPU is not overloaded with keeping the chips busy. That's actually a very powerful piece of hardware. The problem is the price of the CPU, which is probably like double of what you pay for AM Logic or what you pay for the CPU that we have in our control board. And I think there was also a problem with availability of these components. So there were like multiple factors that I believe pushed Bitmain to stop using it. Then recently they have introduced yet another one. It's called Svitek. That's some Chinese set-top box chip that, again, makes our life more difficult in terms of installing Brains OS and running it. Then if we speak about some competing hardware like MicroBT, they built their control boards on top of all Winner chips, which is, again, a Chinese chip typically used in set-top boxes or any multimedia devices. But fortunately, the all Winner chip is quite well, let's say, documented, and most of the drivers are actually in the upstream Linux kernel. So that's it. In terms of performance, the all winners are pretty decent. I would probably put them somewhere at the AM Logic level. I think this pretty much recaps the two main manufacturers. Then, as far as I know, there is Canaan. And Canaan uses actually, or has been until recently, and that still lasts, using what we call a bare metal system. So that is essentially, we don't call it a CPU, but we call it microcontroller unit, MCU, that doesn't have an extra memory. It has everything built in the chip. So it's like system on chip, but like full system on chip without memory. That means it's a very limited system with very limited resources. You are not able to run any reasonable operating system like Linux. So the tools that you have available in the firmware are limited. There's actually none. Like, you don't think of the Canaan machines as if you can just log in with SSH. It's a bare metal control board. One advantage that this approach actually has is it's quite difficult to have like viruses or any malicious things happening to the system, because it's basically a custom built piece of software from scratch, even though probably it's running some our real-time operating system underneath, but that's slightly different domain. So this is like a separate trend. What is attractive about this approach, obviously, is the price, because the MCUs that are not like the full system are cheaper. You don't have to pay for the rest of the peripherals like DDR and so on. The overall board layout, the control board layout, is more simple. But the drawbacks are you basically don't have a full system. So if you want any extensions, special monitoring, special APIs, anything, any automation that you would like to customize on the machines, if you had like a proper login, because that's actually also the problem. Like, if you put aside the fact that you buy a machine, but you really don't own it because you don't have a full admin login, you don't have the root access into the machine, unless you sort of like break in, exploit it, jailbreak into it. If you had this, as in the old days, you can, as a farm, develop, let's say, custom firm software that is in the form of some agents that are running on your machines doing certain things. So this is totally out of question, unless you exploit the machines and break into it. So this would be from the standard manufacturers. I have noticed recently Decive, that was the miner introduced in Mining Disrupt. They also, I think, use actually a beautiful set of like one CPU, one MCU, and an FPGA on their control board. So it's a very complex system design. Most of the chips are made in China. So again, it would be very difficult to find the specs and all these kind of things. So this is speaking about the current manufacturers. Then there is us and let's say Epic, who basically took a very similar approach. Considering us, we are based in Prague. STM is a European company that produces microcontrollers, and one of their systems is our systems on chip is capable of running Linux, and we actually use chips from them because they're basically across the street where we are. So we get very wonderful support. Coincidentally, I noticed that Epic guys basically use almost the same chip. I don't know if it's literally the same part number, but they also built their control board over STM. What we like about STM is the level of support, the level of standardizations in terms of data sheets. Like, so if you want to use the peripheral, you get the full specification, basically the standard way what an embedded systems engineer is used to when you're building a new system. So you buy an off-the-shelf part, you get the full specification data sheets, some developer kit, SDK, and you can start from there. You don't have to spend time on figuring things out or reverse engineering or anything like that. So this is us in Epic. As of the features of the control board, so what we project is essentially three to four hash boards. So we have four sockets, even though the standard enclosure of an Antminer has only three hash boards. I'm sure there's going to be people around messing with it and trying to connect multiple hash boards. So we'll see what happens. The control board fits the X19 enclosure in most cases. So all the J's, J Pros, J Pro Plus, XPs, and so on, these models do fit. What is not supported as of now are the older or the very first generation of S19s that were built on top of the BM1398 chip, which is not being used anymore. The latest XPs have, I think, 1366. So that's probably a walk through the full control board hardware. Ask questions if I skipped anything that you would be interested in.
No, that was great. That was honestly fantastic. Yeah. And I know a lot of people who work in the mining space are needing overviews like that, and there's not a great place to learn. The Brains blog does have a lot of this information, so definitely go check out that section on their website. I want to go back to something you said earlier. You mentioned how a lot of these manufacturers are not customer friendly, and you're surprised customers aren't pushing some of these larger manufacturers to fix some of their issues. As you guys have gone through the process of building hardware control boards at this step, and I'm assuming other products in the future, what have you learned about the hardware process that might make you sympathetic to some of these larger manufacturers? I would assume that a lot of these larger manufacturers are cutting corners, save on costs. They're maybe not choosing as powerful things because they want to make it more efficient on their books. Have you seen that or experienced that yourself, or have you become less sympathetic because they're kind of ripping people off?
In terms of producing the hardware itself, definitely some of the engineering decisions. Like, I am an embedded systems engineer by heart. So for me, the best CPU is the powerful one, right? But that has a certain price tag on it. And if you think about the control board as an important but not essential part of the miner, the essential part are the hash boards. You want to invest the bare minimum into the control board so that it can do the job properly. And that's it. So basically, this determines, let's say, the upper bound on your performance on the CPU and the features that you expect from the CPU to have. For example, most of the hash boards use standard serial communication UART. So you want to have a CPU that has, or system on chip that has UART peripherals in hardware in this many instances. You probably don't need 10 of them. You need 3 to 4 to 6 of them just in case. And the performance of the CPU sort of matches of being able to control, let's say, three, four hash boards. So we went really down this path. We had to optimize the bill of materials so that we come up to a reasonable price, so that we are able to sell the hardware at a reasonable price that's competitive enough. So I, from this perspective, I do, let's say, align with the constraints of the full mining machine manufacturers. But what I don't sympathize with is really the fact that, like, we were actually considering also providing the secure boot, and it's actually somewhere on our list. But again, I would like to take this as an end-user security feature. So end-user security means that sort of not your keys, not your Bitcoin, and not your, let's say, signing keys, not your firmware, not your control board, not your nothing. Mm-hmm. So if we ever have this feature, if it's demanded, we would like to have tooling for the users where they are able to generate their signing key, use it, store it securely, and then apply it to their hardware. Obviously, in order for this feature to be anyhow useful, people also have to realize the implications. Because if, let's say, theoretically, we have this secure boot feature with the end user security level where they choose the keys, if they ever sell the machine for the aftermarket, then obviously they will probably not want to give the keys with the hardware. So that would make the life of the next person kind of difficult. So you have to realize, like, all these implications. But it could be the case that this feature could be, like, super important. But so far, even considering, like, having this is a bit of a theoretical exercise and not like a real use case. So that sort of proves that there's no good reason for the manufacturers to do really exactly this if there's no way to disable it. I do understand it, why they do it for warranty reasons, but still, once the warranty expires, then there should be no reason for people to simply be able to wipe out the control board to a level where they can load anything that they want. And yeah,
go ahead.
And to complete the whole thought process, there is a significant uplift if you, let's say, run Brains OS on an Antminer machine compared to the stock firmware, which is somewhere around 8 to 10%, just by loading the firmware into the machine, running it at the stock settings. So the stock settings, I mean, the power that is being drawn from the wall, if you run the stock firmware, about the same power is being drawn by our firmware, then you should see a performance difference somewhere between 7 to 10 or 8 to 10%. We actually have a small chart on our eShop that explains it and shows it for JPro as a real example. And knowing this, if you say you are a retail user and you would like to get this extra 10% of the BTC, because this directly projects, the hash rate projects linearly to the BTC that you mine, or that in this case you actually don't mine, that's kind of annoying that you don't have that straightforward option or possibility to run any aftermarket firmware.
Did you know that you can make more money by merge mining other networks? Check out makemoremoneymining.com for information on BIPs 300 and 301, a proposal to bring more revenue to Bitcoin miners through sidechains and merge mining called drive chains. Increase your mining revenues and learn more about participating in Bitcoin governance by visiting makemoremoneymining.com. Are you a miner who wants to activate Bitcoin improvements? Check out activation.watch. See what Bitcoin improvements the Bitcoin community, developers, and miners are considering, and show support by signaling for one of many BIPs up for consideration. Activation.watch.
Hey, Mining Pod, I'm Lee Bratcher, president of the Texas Blockchain Council. The Texas Blockchain Summit is now the North American Blockchain Summit. The same emphasis on policy, energy, and Bitcoin mining, but now expanded by working with our partners across the country. We've got great sponsors lined up like Riot, Marathon, GDA, CleanSpark, Bitdeer, Lancium, Cormint, Compass, HTS, Crypto Power, Priority Power, Sonoda, and many more. Solidify your next deal or JV, or just come for the networking on November 15th through 17th in Fort Worth, Texas. for the 3rd annual North American Blockchain Summit. We'll see you there.
Definitely. I want to talk about the end user for this control board, who's going to purchase it. Mm-hmm. I listened to you on What Bitcoin Did, and you're talking about like inserting SD cards and see, you know, 10,000 machines. People can do that, but that's not a great process. I imagine swapping control boards. I mean, I've done it myself. It takes a little bit, even more time. So when you guys are going out and selling this to the market, how are you thinking about it? You did mention earlier, this is like the first part to probably like a larger hardware device. But how are you guys thinking about selling this part to customers out there on the market?
So it's important to realize that Brains or Slushpool started from like pleb miners, right? So they are a significant amount of our customers. It's a community behind all this. So these individual miners, if they made the decision to, or when they made the decision to invest money to buy 1, 2, 3, 4 machines, considering the machine prices, the cost of the control board is something that you can neglect. So these would be, I'd say, one of the one type of the customers that would be willing to buy it because they just are fed up with all these restrictions and policies from Bitmain, for example. Second part is the machines itself do have certain failure rate, and what fails on the machines ranges from fans, goes through the hash boards, which is the most severe damage to the machines, up to the control boards and PSU. And in this case, as a mining farm, if you stock up a Brains control board instead of a specific control board from the manufacturer, then this would be basically a replacement part. And you need to have these in stock, basically. So this is another segment of customers. And like you already mentioned, for us, the whole Brains control board is essentially an exercise to prove that we can actually manufacture it. We can manufacture it in quality, and we can manufacture it at a scale where we can deliver it globally, which gotcha. Is happening right now.
Gotcha. Thanks for that background. Okay, let's talk about hardware for one more second and then move over to talk about Brains Pool. What are some future things you guys are looking at launching in terms of hardware that's public as of right now? And then what are some like things that you guys are looking maybe in like the distant future that you'd be curious about building in Bitcoin?
Yeah, well, for sure. What's on the list is a PSU where we see an opportunity to optimize things. I don't want to talk about the specific details about what is possible to optimize, but sometime after or around Q1 2024, we should be delivering first couple hundred to the market, and then we'll basically start from there. And PSU is an essential component for each mining machine. So then we can sort of extrapolate what should be coming next. And we have been playing with this idea of the full machine for a long, long time. We did non-essential research behind that, some prototyping of hash boards and so on. So we'll see what's going to happen after that.
Gotcha. Okay, let's move over and talk about Brains Pool. So I was looking at Brains Pool stats this morning, and like historically you guys are around 5%. This is, I think, according to BTC.com. So that's over the longevity of Slushpool and Brains Pool together. Yeah. Over the last year, it's dropped pretty precipitously. And I'm curious to ask you just like, what do you guys think about that? Obviously, you guys are moving into different product lines and diversifying there. So it's a strong point in your guys' favor. But how are you guys thinking about the mining pool these days and ways of like strengthening that hash rate?
The problem of the pools nowadays is, unlike the firmware, none of the pools have any significant advantage over each other, right? It goes basically just to mere fact, okay, are your nodes available or are they not available or highly available? And the second, and I would say most frequently spoken topic, and that's the rewarding system. Until now, our pool has been focusing on like we were truly dividing the actual BTC mined within the pool among the miners. So the miners were getting the freshly minted coins. Whereas, let's say our competitors, most of them switched over to PPS or FPPS, that is pay per share. So essentially, our rewarding scheme right now is based on the amount of blocks that we physically mine. And if you participate in that round, when the block is found, you get a proportional reward based on the time when you participated and the amount of hash rate, if I oversimplify it. With the PPS, you're being paid basically for every submit, or we call it share, that has a certain difficulty. So to each share, you can assign a price tag minus the fee of the pool. And regardless if the pool is or is not finding blocks, the miners are basically paid continuously for the delivered results, not for found blocks. So these are the two competing rewarding schemes. The second one, the PPS or FPPS or its alternatives, is definitely more popular among the miners, especially the big public companies want to see in their books, let's say, prediction of their revenue, and they don't want to see any variation. The variation steps in when the pool size, let's say, shrinks under 2-3%, which currently and unfortunately is our case. I cannot speak right now to too many details regarding the future product development on the pool, but we're actually actively considering a few options what to do and how to attract more hash rate to the pool.
And I'm assuming the hardware component has a lot to do this, right? Like bring people into Brains OS, bring people into the control boards, and they get like into your ecosystem, and then they're interested in using the pool. Is there like a feedback loop there for you guys that you think about?
For now, it actually exists already now. If you mine with Brains OS on our pool, the pool fees are zero. The problem is in general that the pool fees are approaching zero levels for big scale miners. So it's very difficult to compete with this. But as you said, yes, we are trying to provide the full software stack and firmware stack for Bitcoin mining, and actually even pieces of hardware for that. So basically full vertical integration of the product line so that you can start from the pool and going down to the control board or eventually Brains mining machine. Unfortunately, with the pool, there have to be more incentives to join us than just, okay, you'll get a branded control board, so you're going to run it through with our pool. And that's also something that we don't anyhow enforce. So and that's actually a misconception that used to be spread in the past. And I think even by the manufacturers, that they were afraid that if their users actually install Brains OS onto their machines, that they will be forced to mine just with Slush Pool or Brains Pool, which is definitely has never been truth, and it's not the case even now. So if you run the firmware, you're free to use it with whatever pool you like.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean the pool industry is obviously pretty cutthroat because it's basically driven to zero very quickly by what you're doing. So
because there's no really added, there's currently no added value to the pool itself. Pool is a service assumed sort of as if you use email today or even WhatsApp or something like that. Like yeah. There is no sure if there was another WhatsApp, probably people would not start using it, right? Because that needs some critical mass. With the pools, that's slightly different situation. Speaking of 51% attack and so on, there, after a certain size, the pools are not attractive. But that's the case for the retail miners. The big miners do care about the, let's say, deterministic and predictive way of knowing what's the revenue is going to be.
Definitely. Yeah. So on one hand you have that, they want the revenue and they want to know the revenue's there, and like their shareholders and all that want to know that that's going to happen. There's not going to be any bad luck. On the other hand, we do have some new things coming to Bitcoin right now, and it's fairly speculative at this point, right? So we have like ordinals and inscriptions. There's been talk about like drive chains, things like that. Does Brains look at any of this and have any considerations about these things? Or are you guys pretty like pure play vanilla interested on your books right now? Because there are some other pools that are like becoming interested in and working on these concepts. And I'm wondering if like there's an avenue for Brains to get involved with that, or if you guys are just going to wait and send the sidelines for now.
Well, for now, we're trying to be focused on the mining tools. But yeah. Sure, like any of these things, if they come our way and sort of make any sense from business perspective, that's something that like we're actively like monitoring the situation, especially with the drive chains. I want to point out I'm not an expert on drive chains. Sure, there's a discussion about BIP300 as far as I know. So there's a lot of interesting things going on around this topic. But again, our domain, our way we make money for daily life and living is Bitcoin mining. So that's where we try to focus, and we try not to get distracted even by interesting and important topics, but that's not our business line as of now.
Speaking of business lines, I want to ask a little bit about how you guys think about winners and losers and proc lines. There's a few things here going on. One, you guys have multiple different revenue streams, right? From control board manufacturing, you guys are going to perhaps produce an ASIC in the future. You guys have Brains pool. There's other things you guys do. And then also you're in a commodity market, right? Where like the price goes up for a while and then it goes down. We're in a bear market for 3 or so years. How do you guys think about building and funding out these different product lines, given that we're in such a dynamic market? I assume from like a founder's perspective and as a business perspective, it'd be really hard to juggle all this stuff. But you know it's important. You know it's important to put your bets on building things for the future, even when right now it's not a lot of money coming in. But yeah, in general, just curious how you guys think about that.
So first of all, you're right. It's definitely a very involved and difficult topic. It's a repeating topic that we're internally discussing basically all the time, because it's important to really understand all these tiny and very important details. One aspect that we did in the past is that like, we don't like to spend really the coins that we mine. And to some extent, we were willing to, let's say, substitute the coin selling by taking loans in the form of bonds. And that's still an ongoing activity. Obviously, still the revenue of the company has to be on the upper side so that we can be sure that we can pay back our liabilities. But still, considering that we do trust in Bitcoin future, I don't want to say like I don't know when it's going to be 100K, right? But still slowing down the pace of burning the BTC in exchange for fiat to a sustainable level of debt of the company, that's something that I think that is the proper approach. So basically balancing these two things. You have to sell a little bit, but at the same time, it's convenient for bigger investment things to take some extra and external money.
Yeah, definitely. Like right on the top of your guys' website has the bond section, which is... Yep. It's definitely interesting. And the first thing I think about it is back in 2021, all these Bitcoin miners took out, like they went public, they sold equity, and they've done lots of dilution to be able to raise. And obviously these are different markets. These are self-miners versus you guys running a pool and hardware business and maybe some self-mining as well, but it's not the largest component of your business. That being said, how do you guys think about equity versus raising with debt? Especially when a time when debt is so expensive right now. I think a lot of Bitcoin miners are now looking at debt, thinking like maybe that's like the more ethical solution, but it might not be as pragmatic as an equity raise. Equity obviously has its downsides, right? Where you're, like you're selling any part of your business, you're selling
losing control, right? Yeah. I would say, again, it's a combination. I want to point out that we didn't take any external equity until now, so the company is solely owned by the two co-founders. It may change depending on how we proceed with the mining hardware, because that's like I honestly don't understand like software companies taking or giving away equity instead of like, let's say, working harder and like, finding your way around to generate some revenue. But for the hardware story, I think it's at some point it becomes like very capital intensive. And I would say like this is the moment where it's actually legit to make the decision to give up some equity. And this is what has been happening with the big mining operations, where it was essentially the combination of both. And I think the businesses that went solely down the debt path are now in the trouble, because at some point when the bear market hit, they were not able to pay back, like basically to service their loans, not even speaking of paying back. So yeah, it's crazy. I think a healthy, I would say a healthy combination of both is the right approach. So we're actually considering the adding the second part when the right time comes.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's crazy to think back about some of these big Bitcoin miners taking on large amounts of debt, Bitcoin price drops, and then the Fed increased interest rates at the same time. It was just like a perfect pain cycle for them.
Yes.
At the same time, it's you want to control your destiny, so giving up equity is kind of tough. We've also seen a lot of people misuse equity raises or through dilution. Okay, I have to ask, last question, when, what's miner?
Okay, that's a hard one. It's not 2 weeks. Let's say 6 months, something like that. I'll try to describe it like this. We have certain priorities that bring the most revenue. I'm not saying that what's miner is not a good source of revenue for our business model with the firmware. Again, but what's miner is one of the manufacturers, or MicroBT is one of the manufacturers that lock their hardware as well. So even if you have the mining, you would still struggle with the installation. What is actually very, very, let's say, intensive on the what's miner side is that they make so many flavors of the hardware, like basically really. The amount of combinations is huge, and supporting all that is, I don't want to say it's impossible, it is possible. The question is about the cost. So sure, we are always somewhere in the background working on the what's miner, but currently it didn't have a priority for us. So I don't know, 6 months is a good bet. I know. You're going to ask me next time.
I will ask you next time. And okay. I'm sure we'll get some tweets based on this show. I have to ask also, I said that was the last question, but one more I just thought of is like, you know, we had the S21 just announced the other week, and I'm sure you were in the crowd in Hong Kong when that was announced. Any thoughts on that as we're closing here on some of the new the M60, Canaan put a new machine out, and then the new Bitmain lineup?
So we were at the announcement of Canaan in Singapore. That has a very impressive number of joules per terahash as well. I think all the three manufacturers are trying to catch up with each other in terms of the efficiency. With the launch of the first batch of the machines, it's going to be, that's like the surprise moment. And essentially, I would say it's a bet. How the machines are going to be really effective or efficient, and what would be the quality of the hardware? Would there be any hardware issues? Would there be any failure rate on delivery and so on? So I'm quite excited to see what's going to hit the market. And what is actually even more interesting aspect, by the time this is going to hit the market, we'll be very close before the next halving. So essentially, the current price may not be speaking of the price of the hardware, may not be the price of the hardware at the halving. So a lot of interesting things definitely are going to happen in the next 8 to 9 months.
Let's hope price on both of the things go up in the near future. Very least Bitcoin price. Jan, thank you so much for joining the Mining Pod. I appreciate all your insights and the detail on the control boards, the brains pool, all the way to talking about S21.
Thank you for having me.